Alone Against the Flames, Chapter 2. With no better options, you make your way back towards Emberhead, and in particular, May Ledbetter's house. You arrive, and find May is doing laundry. She looks surprised to see you again. Forget something? No, unfortunately, it seems that Silas and I had a bit of a miscommunication. We had agreed to meet this morning, after him fixing the vehicle, to head off on our journey, but it seems like he's left without me, so I figured what better thing to do than to make my way back towards at least something I'm sort of familiar with, and figured I'd come to see if you had any ideas as to alternative transport. After explaining the situation to May, she offers to store your bags while you try to arrange alternative transport. You are grateful to relinquish the load. Nobody here has anything like a car. She strokes her chin and narrows her eyes. Maybe you could find somebody with a horse and a cart for your bags. I could ask around later. Try Mr. Winters at the village hall. He'll know if anyone will. Or ask among the artisans. Their workshops are first left on Silbury Street. She reaches over and squeezes your wrist. Don't worry, I won't see you sleeping in the street, money or no money. You thank May and turn to face the village. You wander the streets of Emberhead without any particular destination in mind. The village is built on a relatively flat upland with splendid views. To the north, the hazy tips of the White Mountains reach for the heavens. To the south, the sparkling waters of Lake Winnipesaukee touch the horizon. The village itself takes less than 5 minutes to traverse from edge to edge. You arrived on the winding road to the west. The only other road leaves to the south, following a lower ridge of land as it turns east. In the southwest of the village, an open grassy space borders a ruined church, its graveyard cresting the cliffs. To the northeast, the three main thoroughfares meet at a raised black metal structure. It looms stark against the blue sky. Well, if anyone were to know of any alternative transport, what better place than the general store? You think to yourself, as you make your way towards the general store of Emberhead. It's located on a corner beside the main road, just before it plunges to the south. The shopkeeper is a brisk, immense lady with a starched apron and strong shoulders. She looks hard at your unfamiliar face. Good morning, ma'am. I seem to have had a bit of a miscommunication with my coach driver. We'd agreed that we were going to be setting out this morning after he had fixed his motor coach, and it seems to me that he parted without me. I was wondering if you knew of any other transports that come through?
Transports?
There's a motor coach comes through twice a week. But you missed it, you said. All the other transports are trucks are bringing in my supplies every second Tuesday. But he's not due till next week. She shrugs. Seems to you that Emberhead is content in keeping its distance from the outside world. With that news, you decide to peruse the general store a little bit and come upon a dusty hunting knife that you figure may or may not come in hand down the road if you have to trek out on foot. So you decide, with what little spare money you have, to purchase that knife. It's a little dusty, well used, but all in all, in pretty good shape, and could probably hack down some wood if needed for a fire. With your newly purchased knife, you depart from the general store and begin to wander around Emberhead a little bit more. You slowly begin to get your bearings. You decide to further explore the roads of Emberhead and begin making your way towards the eastern road and then on to the lower level. The air is fresh and the walk down to the lower ridge is invigorating. You notice cultivated fields stretching through the lowlands around Emberhead, and among the crops, some livestock. But shockingly, no horses. Are you going to have to make your onward journey on foot? Very well likely would be the case. Further down, the road skirts the edge of the ridge and descends. There are a few scattered hovels here with signs of habitation. They are set a substantial distance apart. As you examine them, a door opens and an older man steps out. He is wearing a bedraggled suit, but carries a piece of cloth, which he tosses over his head like a hood. As he does this, he sees you and freezes. The man looks up at the village, scanning the cliff tops. You get a brief flash of his face. There's something unsettling about it. Then he turns to walk away from the road, but as he does, he raises a hand and slowly beckons to you. Puzzled, and going counter to every logical instinct in your body, you decide to follow the man around the outcrop. He glances up, then steps between two rocks and vanishes. Closer inspection reveals a narrow channel leading into the cliff. There is just enough light to see a small natural chamber within. You will be uncomfortably close to this man if you go inside. Still curious, yet wary, you decide to grip the handle of your new hunting knife as you slowly squeeze into the outcropping and enter the concealed chamber, almost banging your head on the low ceiling. The man settles back against the wall and watches until you draw close. Then he slides back his hood. Some of the man's face remains. A strip from the side of his jaw to his right eye socket is healthy and pale, if aged, but the left side is consumed by angry scar tissue. One eye droops hooded by melted flesh, and the nostril on that side is pulled open to leave a gaping hole. The disfigured man studies your reaction with his one good eye.
Name's Arbogast. Willard Arbogast. Guess I don't need to ask what brings you to Emberhead.
Concealing your shock at Willard's visage the best that you can, you begin to explain how you've come to make your way to Emberhead.
Well, truthfully, sir, I had no real intention of coming here. You see, I'm on my way to the Mistatonic University to begin a job there, and my travels upon my path led me nearby here, and our motor coach broke down. So I spent last night here while my motor coach driver Silas was set to fix the vehicle, and it seems like he and I had a bit of a miscommunication, and I went to meet him this morning, and it seems that he has left and stranded me here.
Willard's swollen mouth gives a little twist downwards.
Son of a devil has rat's blood.
His fingers tighten into a fist. Arbogast fixes you with a lopsided yet intense stare.
You seek me out, eh?
He looks up at the cave ceiling.
Which one of them told you about me? Never mind, doesn't matter. Truth is, they fear what I know. They'd never come at me direct. Don't want to end up like old Arbogast. He giggles.
The high-pitched sound is all the more grotesque coming from those bloated lips. Then abruptly, his gaze turns to iron.
Emberhead died 40 years ago, shattered by flame, consumed by the stars themselves. The ancient hill was cleansed by inferno, and from the blackened ground came new life, as is the way of all things. The Abnaki knew.
Arbogast wipes his nose on his sleeve.
Except none of that happened. The flames were turned away, the necessary death postponed a year, and a year again. And now those up there, he stabs a scrawny finger at the ceiling, think themselves savior of the village. Think they can defy the great old ones.
Aye, Kathuga.
He shakes his head. With strange aeons, their lives matter less than the blink of an eye.
A fierce intelligence burns in his gaze, but you suspect Arbogast may be quite insane. Should his mood change, it would not be difficult for him to seize one of those loose rocks and crack your skull with it. Not quite knowing what to make about the Abnaki and the great old ones that Arbogast mentioned, you seize on the familiar and inquire about the villagers. Arbogast's face twists, creasing the scarred cheek.
Fuh. Their fathers and mothers knew the truth. They listened. They knew their doom and found their place within it. They looked into their own hearts and did the unspeakable. The current brood had the arrogance of children. Everything has been given to them, and they assume it always will.
He glares at the ceiling.
They would that I left or died, that I took the old words with me. But mark what I say. Those who live in high places have further to fall.
Arbogast runs his hand through his hair. A wide strip is missing from the left side, displaced by scar tissue. He climbs to his feet.
Arbogast pauses in the shadows.
There's something about you. Something the previous ones never had. Perhaps you can make it through. If you want to hear more, meet me again after dark. 9 o'clock. The graveyard on the other side.
He lifts a gnarled finger.
Don't be followed, else I won't be there. This ain't the time of year for a showdown.
Arbogast wipes his nose on his sleeve again.
Go now. Their eyes are on me. And stranger, don't try to run. You'll never make it.
You emerge in the sunlight, blinking, and more than a little shaken. You turn back to the road and your core business, getting out of Emberhead and onwards to Ossipee. The ridge gives you a good viewpoint from which you can see the course of the road. It winds with the hills, disappearing into the woodland for a while before emerging further on. You lose sight of it somewhere towards a second patch of woodland. By your best estimation, that is at least 6 or 7 miles distant. You see no other settlements or traffic. May be worth taking a chance and walking. The weather is still mild, but you will need supplies before you attempt it. Having come up short thus far on finding alternative transport, you decide to try your luck at the village hall like May Ledbetter had recommended. The village hall backs against a cliff at the east end of Silbury Street. It's the largest building you've seen so far in Emberhead. It is, however, locked and shuttered. You walk around it, peering through gaps in the shutters. There seems to be one large room, presumably for community meetings, and a smaller annex that serves as an office and archive. One of the windows is bricked up. Back at the main door, you can see no posted opening hours.
Mr. Winters doesn't open up mornings, this time of year, at least, says a gray-garbed woman passing by. Best come back this afternoon.
You ask whether the office has a telegraph.
Don't know, she shrugs.
Who would we call? You'll have to try again later. Having made no progress on your attempts to find transport, and growing hungry as the day goes by, you roam the streets of Emberhead looking for sustenance. There is nothing resembling the busy cafes of your hometown, or anything one might call a restaurant. It's beginning to look like you may well have to get supplies from the general store when May Ledbetter comes down the street with a girl trailing in her wake. This must be Ruth. As she notices you, she races past her mother and approaches you with a smile. This is a different Ruth from the shy creature of last night. As she reaches you, she stops and stretches her arms up in celebration. She looks up into your eyes. Abruptly, the smile drops from her face and she looks several years older.
Get out before the festival, she hisses. Get out!
She blinks hard and then scuttles back toward her mother. May approaches, wrapping an arm around her daughter's shoulders. She smiles.
How are you getting on? Have you found transport?
Startled, you explain the frustration of the situation.
I'd try Mr. Winters in the village hall. He's always in an afternoon. You'll be hungry by now. Help yourself to any food in the house. The door's not locked.
You glance at Ruth, where she has squirreled herself behind her mother's leg. Her eyes implore you to silence.
Very well, ma'am. Your hospitality knows no bounds. I appreciate all you've done for me.
As you make your way towards the Ledbetters. The door opens easily. In the low kitchen, you make a meal from stodgy bread and leftover stew. A little window offers a view to the mountain. If you learned one thing this morning, is what that Emberhead streets hold little to occupy the visitor from out of town. But there are still about 5 hours of daylight remaining. You could take some provisions and the bare essentials from your luggage and set out in the hope of reaching another settlement before dark. Or you could ask advice from this Mr. Winters you keep hearing about. Your lunch was nothing to write home about, but it sure beats starving. During your lunch, you mull over today's events, having met two people who, with very dissimilar methods, have urged you to be very cautious in the little town of Emberhead. First was Arbogast, who, being no person to mince words, said not to leave, as you would not survive. Ruth, on the other hand, a little girl and daughter of May, urged you, nay, pleaded with you, to leave and escape this village. With everything that you've experienced so far in Emberhead, you've decided that sensibilities have now taken root, and it is time for you to make on your way to Ossipee. You take money, water, and some sandwiches. And it seems polite to leave May Ledbetter a note explaining the situation and that you will return for your bags as soon as possible. The sky is flecked with cloud, but shows no sign of imminent rain. A couple of villagers watch as you descend on the southern road and follow it around to the east. The black metal structure looms on the promontory above. You shiver as you pass the lower huts and head out of Emberhead. After the miserable enclosed streets of Emberhead, you are refreshed by the open air and sense of progress. An hour later, however, the empty road ceases to be a novelty. You have just entered the first patch of woodland when you hear an eerie, lilting howl from the north. You hesitate. You have grown up, after all, in the familiar landscapes of the town. Wild animals are a little outside of your experience. Is it unwise to head into the unknown by yourself? Or is it more unwise to sit within the unknown of the little town of Emberhead after two such unsettling experiences with some of its denizens? After some serious thought, you decide to act on the former option and press on through the woods. A little further along the way, a second call answers the first, but it sounds further away. You follow the road through woodland. Branches lean over the road. The foliage is quite beautiful, from gold to russet and a deep, rich red. Fallen leaves crunch beneath your feet. After about half an hour, you emerge from the trees. The road makes a lazy curve around foothills ahead into another patch of woodland. A rough track seems to offer a shortcut through the woods. Having exhausted any propensity for straying off the more well-beaten path, you decide to stick to the road. After all, there is no guarantee that the track leads back to the road that you are following. Better to stay on course, even if it takes you longer. But you are uncomfortably aware of the sun setting behind you as you walk on. 15 minutes elapse. You are passing a natural clearing when you catch movement out of the corner of your eye. About 30 yards away, something large lingers at a trunk. It's about your height, and black with small rounded ears. As you watch, it rears up on its hind legs. A bear. It seems most interested in the fruit hanging above. Having never seen a bear, or dealing with a bear at all in your life, you freeze, rooted to the spot, and try your hardest to keep your breath shallow. You watch the creature from the distance. It pauses and looks around the clearing. The bear plunges its claws into the trunk and scales the tree with surprising agility. It steadies itself on a fork and proceeds to tear fruit from the branches, cramming the dark morsel. Plums? into its mouth. You watch for perhaps 10 minutes until the animal seems to tire of eating and drops from the tree to the ground, looks around the clearing, and yawns before heading off into the forest, its rump swinging. You return to the road and resume your walk east. At least, you hope you're still heading east. The curves of the road become disorienting when the light begins to fade. Clouds hide the stars. Seems you will not reach another settlement before dark, and you feel weariness in your legs. The air is much cooler now. While you're walking, you hear something from the road behind you. It's a dull clunk, perhaps a dead branch falling. You pause, but the sound does not repeat. You trace a few steps back and look down the road, and there's nothing to see. All of a sudden, another cry splits the gloom. It is the same unearthly call you heard when you entered the first patch of woodland, but this time, with a grating undertone that makes you shiver, it seems closer. Thinking better of it and deciding that it'd be safer to continue traversing the road in daylight, you try to find a tree. While doing this, the echoing call comes again, and this time it is answered by something closer to you. This seems a good time to get off the ground. You find a tree with obvious footholds and a thick branch at about twice your height. You haul yourself up. You are not dressed for this. Nearly slipping and falling a couple of times, you ease yourself onto the widest branch you see. It's less than comfortable, but you do feel at least safer in this elevated position. Night settles slowly around you. The woods come alive with small noises, scratching nearby, distant bird calls, and the gentle rustle of leaves. Although resigned to a long, tedious night of wakefulness, after a few hours you find yourself yawning. You loop your belt around the branch and your clothing to hold yourself in place as best you can, and then you close your eyes. In your dreams, the trees change position, lifting their roots from the ground and shuffling to another spot before planting themselves again. This seems perfectly normal, companionable even. They start to glow a greenish yellow as the flames lick. Flames! The trees begin to scream. Tongues of flickering fire snake up the tree towards you. You scrabble at the belt which binds you to this pyre, coughing as the vapors fill your throat, choking. You loose the belt, and you part ways from it and the tree as you plunge into the conflagration. The ground rushes at you. Watch for Chapter 3 and the conclusion to our hero's journey in Emberhead.